Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as is, from the 14th chapter, entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature, text number 9. Sattvam suke sanjayati raja karmani bharata jnanam avrityatuttama pramadi sanjati uta. Translation. O son of Bharata, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness, passion conditions one to fruit of action, and ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Purport. A person in the mode of goodness is satisfied by his work or intellectual pursuit, just as a philosopher, scientist, or educator may be engaged in a particular field of knowledge and may be satisfied in that way. A man in the mode of passion may be engaged in fruit of activity. He owns as much as he can and spends for good causes. Sometimes he tries to open hospitals, give to charity institutions, etc. These are signs of one in the mode of passion. And the mode of ignorance covers knowledge. In the mode of ignorance, whatever one does is good neither for him nor for anyone. Om Agyanatim Arandasya Ginandana Salakya Chakshur Minitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We tend to experience the world which is governed by the three modes of material nature as reality, because we have been covered over by these three modes of material nature since time immemorial. And therefore, we are responding to them in so many situations and are always calculating our advantages and disadvantages. And we are trying to fulfill so many desires which are born from this interaction of the material nature. But the soul is not at all meant to be influenced by the three modes of material nature. The soul is of the same nature as the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord is Atmaram, satisfied within the self. So the devotee also becomes satisfied within. He's no longer dependent on the three modes of material nature. Therefore it is said, Dvaviva chintya mukto paramananda pluto yovimukta jada bala yoga nebhya paramgata. There are two types of people who are happy in this world. One who's in total illusion and who is thinking that he is happy. He is simply pushed about by the three modes of material nature. And therefore the scriptures consider his intelligence immature or childish. And the other person is the self-realized soul who is beyond the three modes of material nature. When one is beyond the three modes of material nature, then one can actually focus on Krishna. And that is the very purpose. The purpose of life is to focus on Krishna. Whether one is beyond the modes of material nature or whether one is influenced by the modes of material nature, doesn't matter. Ultimately, devotional service to Krishna is the only activity. Right? So in our movement, mostly, we are not free from the influence of the modes of material nature, but nonetheless, we have the good fortune of very strong transcendental knowledge. So we know a lot, but there is a very big gap between what we know and what we practice. Sometimes they say like that this is the movement with the highest philosophy, and it is amazing how little the members of this movement are following of everything they know. How much, and it's like the greatest gap between knowledge and an actual practice, or between practice and precept. Yeah. Sometimes that is said. There is no movement where there's a greater distance between the two. And it may be true because there is no movement which has such high goals. Right? Therefore, it is amazing how we can have such high goals and not become discouraged, not become disheartened, not become somehow or other compromised, and not to give up trying for the ultimate goal in life. Pure, unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is a gradual process. We see that there is a system in the process of bhakti yoga of step by step increasing our commitment in various ways. We have many guidelines on the path of devotional service. And one is always meant to progress to a next stage. There is no such thing that one should not look forward of how I can increase my commitment. That's what it is. My commitment to serve Krishna, right, in terms of time and in terms of quality, how can I increase it? And if one is not increasing, then one is actually no longer on the spiritual path. Because the spiritual path is always increasing. At least one is not on the path of spiritual progress, I should say. To be stagnated in spiritual life means one becomes temporarily bound up again in the material energy. And one has to stay in the material world for some reason or other. So, little by little, we take steps. Like, for example, it begins that we have some faith. Then, it says, Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. Then one comes in the association of devotees. And in the association of devotees, there comes a point where one surrenders to the devotees and where one begins to place himself under the directions of the devotees. So that's a very difficult stage. Right? That stage is a very big step. Generally, we call it joining. Right? At that stage, more or less, one either joins or is almost about to join, right? Where he places himself under the direction of the devotees. A very difficult thing to achieve. Of course, it still takes a lot more practice to do so, but one accepts some person as more advanced and as being able to guide us. That is the principle. Then one can become situated in Bhajana Kriya. Then eventually one can be brought to the lotus feet of a spiritual master. And once one tries to take shelter there, then one has to accept the order. First, before initiation, one has to already obey the order of the spiritual master. Only after one has for some time obeyed the orders, and in that way has passed certain tests, then one becomes an eligible candidate. And then commitment still increases more and more. And it continues more and more. It comes to the point that we have to fully give everything for Krishna. So in every discussion, the underlying aim of the discussion is to give us more insight how to increase our commitment to Krishna. If that's not the aim of our Krishna Katha, then we are actually not understanding the purpose of Krishna Katha. If we think that it is merely tushyanti cha ramanti cha, to relish, right? If it's merely to relish, then we should understand that still there is more. Whatever internal experiences we may have in Krishna consciousness, in terms of ecstasies or in terms of deep inspiration and so on, have to translate into renewed service. If the consequence of our surrender in service is that we are experiencing great, deep ecstasy or inspiration in Krishna consciousness, that ecstasy is only measured in how much one is then inspired to render service. And that is the actual ongoing process. So each time, our commitment should increase in that way. It should just not just increase in terms of placing ourselves under authority, in terms of taking vows, in terms of becoming more serious now. It should come in terms of experiencing great inspiration from the service and then showing to be very enthusiastic. Just as in one prayer, there is a prayer which is basically saying that I'm praying to be as enthusiastic as my spiritual master, who is always enthused. Right? And this is a very, that is the quality, always enthused to do devotional service. Not burdened by devotional service. Of course, in the material world, we have material bodies and material minds. And these material bodies, they have limited capacity. They get exhausted. Right? How long can we work? How much headache can we take? How much can we take on our shoulders before we get crushed? Right? But we see that the pure devotee is always enthusiastic. Just as I recall how Lokanath Maharaj, somewhere in the, I guess it was the 80s, I can't remember when it was, but at one point, must have been from the mid-80s to the 90s, it was in the years that I was in charge in Mayapur of the Samadhi. And then one time he came to me and he asked me to help organize, I think, certain things for the Padayatra during the festival. Right? And I said, Maharaj, why are you coming to me? Right? Why are you coming to me? I'm so busy. Right? Why don't you ask somebody else? Right? I have so much service already. I just have no time to even do what I'm supposed to do. He said, no. He said, you know, in our village, right, there is an old tradition. And he says, it's like, if you want to have something done, right, then you must go to a busy man. Right. You go to a busy man. He said, what logic is this? You know, you go to a busy man? He says, yes, you go to a busy man. You don't go to a man who's not busy. Right. No. When you need something done, you ask the busy man. I said, does that make sense? You know, why don't you? He said, yes, it makes sense because, he said, the busy man by nature is active. Right. So at least he'll do something. Whereas the man who's not busy by nature is lazy, so he will not do anything. Right. So you asked a busy man. And I could see here was some old village logic, right? Different than the kind of logic that I was And it was kind of, was endearing, right? So it was kind of nice with his, so he got me with his nice village logic. I did it. I said, all right then, okay, can I say? After such a nice argument, how can I say no? Now, so if we use this example of the busy man to the pure devotee. The pure devotee may take so much devotional service because the pure devotee does not just take responsibility for worshipping the deity and for making sure that the temple of the Lord is properly clean and maintained. But he is also taking responsibility for bringing all the conditioned souls to the lotus feet of the deity, right? And therefore he is also taking responsibility for the conditioned souls wherever he can, whenever he can. So whenever there is some conditioned soul in need, how can he turn that person away? Right? He cannot. And therefore, again, he must also give his energy. And in this way, there is no limit. And we see this spirit in Prabhupada, right, who was so ready. It said Prabhupada always had time for everyone. Right? People say this a lot about Prabhupada. He was so nice, they say. He always had time. And although he was the head of a huge international institution, still he was making time for every individual. Right? This is what they say. But it wasn't like a management technique. Right? It wasn't like, you know, like, to be personal, one should always make time for every individual and have that like a little motto on the wall, you know, just, yes, I have to remember this. Don't forget this principle. This is one of the important principle of running an institution and making the institution people-centered rather than mission-centered, you know. Is the institution, are the people for the institution or is the institution for the people? And these kind of issues. Yes, it is for the people and like this. That was not the underlying spirit of Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's part of the mission was simply, his mission was to deliver every single person in the entire universe. And if anyone turned to him, then he would reciprocate. Irregardless of his own situation, irregardless of his own condition, irregardless of his lack of energy or anything, irregardless of his health, irregardless of his age, right? He would respond and he would just somehow or other connect that person with Krishna. Of course, that is a very blissful engagement because, first of all, it is really fulfilling the desire of Krishna, who wants to bring all living beings to the highest level of ecstasy. He wants to bring every living being into this eternal ocean of ever-growing bliss. And when one is occupied in that service, then priyakritama. Then one is recognized by Krishna. Then Lord Krishna is recognizing that we, this is my most dear devotee. Yes. So, it's a matter of commitment. It's a matter of feeling responsible, right? Of feeling responsible for all, feeling responsible for the well-being of all, right? And Prabhupada felt responsible for the well-being of the whole world. Right? He made that was his mission. That meant he felt personally responsible for every single person in the world. It was a big, very big commitment, inconceivable commitment. He was not thinking, how much energy do I have? I'm just one man. How can I deal with the whole world? Just thinking anyway, I'll try and do that, and ananyas chinta yantumam ye jana paryupaste. I rely on Krishna, that he will supply me with what I require to do this. But I just rely on Krishna, and I'm not going to rely on any material calculation. 70 years old, Swamiji. Srimati Muraji said, Swamiji, how can you go on this boat? How can you go on this boat, Swamiji? You are very old. Surely you will die. And she was speaking like this, Swamiji, you cannot go on this boat. And he said, no, it is my mission. It is the order of my spiritual master. So serious. He was so, but Swamiji, you are old. No. And she could see, he cannot be, his mind cannot be changed. He is not listening to any argument. He is just determined. And I must go. And basically, she could she just have told him, no, you cannot go. No, she could not have told him. Because she was a devotee of Krishna. He had not just gone to any steamship line. He had gone to the Sindhya steamship line. And he knew very well that Srimati Muraji was a great devotee of Balagopal. He knew that very well. He knew that she was a Tushti Margi, a member of that, the followers of Vallabhacharya who were worshipping Lord Balagopal. How could she refuse him? She was a Vaishnavi. Could she refuse him? Could she somehow or other say that Lord Krishna could not help him? That Lord Krishna could not empower him to do it? Could she say that? Not really. Because how could she deny the words of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? Ananyas chintayantamam yajana paryapasate. So when he was so determined, no, Lord Krishna will help me. Right? Then what could she say? And she could only say, well, all right, if you are, Swamiji, if you are so convinced and so determined, I think, then the Lord will help you. Yes. Because that is it, right? The Lord is not just helping everyone to perform miracles. Right? Oh, the Lord is helping everyone. But to perform miracles, he is helping only few. But when that determination is so great to just go beyond all limitations and to just do it, to take on all the entire mission of delivering all like Prabhupada did, then naturally, what could she say? She said, yes, I think if you are so determined, yes, then I think Lord Krishna will protect you. He'll make it possible. All right, Swamiji, you go. Yes, we say Prabhupada was always preaching to everyone. Yes, he was not just always preaching to everyone. He had taken responsibility for everyone. Right? And therefore, he was automatically preaching to everyone because he was just always thinking, this person also, I have to take him back. And therefore, he was naturally always trying to give everyone what it would take to take him back. Right? You see, this is the core. It wasn't like, I have this duty, it's the order of my spiritual master. I have to preach all over the world. I have to somehow or other cross this ocean. I have to go to America, to this sinful land, because it's my duty. I have to preach. No. Prabhupada had taken it to a much deeper level. Yes. All these, the whole world, right? The whole world is in my hands now. In my hands, right? That was it. Right? There was this advertisement of an insurance company, right? Also, like something like there was a slogan. I don't remember verbatim the slogan, but it meant something like that: the whole world in our hands, right? Something like that: the whole world in our hands. And Prabhupada said, yes, the whole world is in our hands, right? Not like the whole world is in our hands, we have all the opportunities, but the whole world is under our protection, in our hands, basically. That was it, yes. So, and we have difficulty in extending our interest to a few people. You know, we're thinking, oh boy, I have to take responsibility for all these people. right? For just 10 people, 50 people, right? I think, oh, so much responsibility I have. Oh, I have to be responsible for 50 other people to be Krishna conscious. And it's so difficult. They don't want to be. Can you imagine what Prabhupada had to go through? The whole world doesn't want to be Krishna conscious. But, you know, he was still taking responsibility for them to become it. Whether they want it or not, it had nothing to do with it, right? They're going to be Krishna conscious. It's just a matter of time. So, all right, I'll give them something for now, right? And then those who are a little more serious, I'll give them a little more, right? But everyone, I'll give something. No one will get away with it. Take some prasad. No, no. No, thank you very much. No, no, no. Please, you cannot leave. You must take something. He cannot go without taking some prasad. How can we leave him like that, right? He'll go back for lifetimes in the material world. No, 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 no. No, I insist you take some. No, no. Please. And there's the man, the professor in Melbourne, Australia, sitting with a dripping gulab jamun, just looking at it. And the thing is just soaking in sugar syrup. And he's all dressed up in a nice suit, and he has no plate, nothing. And he's so sophisticated and so well-behaved and so trained in the West. And I mean, how could he eat such a thing without a little plate and a special little fork for eating sweets? No, he just sits there with a dripping gulab jamun. And he's looking at it in total disbelief. And Prabhupada says, no, you can taste it. You can taste it. And he's looking, really? And finally, because Prabhupada pushes him again, and no, please, please try, please try. You can taste it. Yes, you can. You can taste it, you know. And finally, the man bites, and the juice is running everywhere and dripping on his cloth, etc. And Prabhupada just smiles, you know, instead of... He just smiles and says, nice, huh? Isn't it? Very tasty. And after such a smile, all the professor can say is yes, although his clothes are soiled by the sugar syrup. Oh, gulab jamun. What can we say? Huh? What can we say? Just such a desire to give someone Krishna consciousness. This man also. Yes, you also. Yes, you are a professor, but you must also be a devotee. Right? Actually. Because really, that is what you really need. Right? And like this, Prabhupada could see beyond all the designations, could just see, I'm responsible for you too. You are also in my bhakti program. Prabhupada had a very big bhakti program. That was all. And everyone was in it, right? Whether they wanted or not, they were in Prabhupada's bhakti program. Yes, and how to get them to make advancement. And people responded like anything. Yes. And Prabhupada never worried that Krishna consciousness would not spread. He was never thinking that here I am in this impossible condition, right? In a place where people are so sinful and so materialistic, they will never take it. What can we do? We may have to go back empty-handed. No, they will take it. They will take it. Because why will they take it? For several reasons. One is, Krishna is all attractive. So there's no question, right? There's no question that they will not be attracted to Krishna. It's just that they cannot focus because they are so much bewildered by these modes of material nature, especially passion and ignorance, that they just cannot see. So even when you put Krishna in front of them, their mind, they cannot think. Yes, here's Krishna. Yes, 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 yes. Very nice, thank you. Yes, nice. And they're thinking of other things. So say, no, 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 here is Krishna. Huh? Yeah, 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 yeah. Krishna, Krishna. Again and again. Simply presenting the all-attractive Krishna. But to people who are in the modes of material nature, they cannot focus. Bahusakki anantascha. The intelligence is many-branched. Huh? And because the intelligence is many-branched, they just can't focus. You present Krishna and the mind is in 50 different places. Yes, what? You know, just... In one interview Prabhupada asked the interviewer a question, and he said, the interviewer, absent-minded, yes, yes, yes. But Prabhupada said, no, no, you're not listening. You're not paying attention. What? No, listen to what I say. Right? Prabhupada was forcing people to concentrate, to pay attention, to go beyond the modes of material nature. Krishna's all attractive. Prabhupada said that it is not that one place is good for Krishna consciousness and another place is not good for Krishna consciousness. As we are going on book distribution, we have our favorite places. And we have places that we don't like, where we don't want to go. If you have to distribute books, boy, there are some places. Oh no, not Hochkatrina. Oh no. You know, or something like that, right? Not Utrecht. Oh no. My favorite place is Axel, right? Yes, you don't know Axel. It's my secret place. I'm keeping it for myself. It's a really good place. Right? It's a little forgotten piece of Holland, right? Just there. Of course Gauranga knows that spot. He knows every spot. But it was not his spot. But that spot is just where Belgium touches Holland, and it becomes, and there's a little corner of Zeeland, right? And that is like, the people are Dutch, but they are like Belgians, right? So the brains are Dutch, that means they're sharp, but the hearts are Belgian. So it's a real good place. It's the best, you know, the best of both worlds, right? They're sharp, you know, they were sharp, but they didn't have but not hard-hearted. In Holland, people are sharp, hearts are hard, right? In Belgium, people are not so sharp, but hearts are more soft. But there, they were just the right combination, right? So it was just the right place for me, right? I did great there every time. I loved the place. So I was convinced that place was the best place, the best place for book distribution. And I was convinced that some places were good and some places were not good for preaching. But Prabhupada did not agree. Prabhupada said, no, it's not that one place is better than any other place. He said, all places are good. Right? And he proved that, but because in India, everyone thought that the West, you know, on the other side of the ocean, Vedas say don't go there. The more West you go, the more materialistic people come, the more remote they become from the Supreme Lord. It says like that in the scriptures. Therefore, impossible these places. But Prabhupada went, right? And Prabhupada said, yes, because Krishna is everywhere and there are devotees everywhere. Therefore, you cannot say that one place is better than another. And Lord Chaitanya said, Prithividya Chiyatanagradigram. And he cited that as the proof. So in this way, he was ready to find them, to find those who were ready. Of course, he was adopting everyone. He was giving the mercy to all. And that's the spirit. Then one becomes really transparent. Then one becomes the instrument of Krishna. Because Krishna gives the mercy to all. There's no one exempted from Krishna's mercy. So giving the mercy to all is our mission. But to do that is so much work, so inconceivably much work, that one must just work around the clock. One must work all the time. Right? One must, and even if one is resting, then one minimizes that. So this is what we have to develop, this sense of responsibility for those who are in the modes of material nature. That's actually Krishna consciousness. Because real Krishna consciousness doesn't mean that we somehow or other try to think of Krishna. Smartavyam satatam visnor vismartavyo najatu sit, right? It is said that one should always remember Krishna, never forget him. Sarvavidini seidushu reityure vikinkaram. That is the purpose of all the injunctions and prohibitions of the Vedas. Okay, very nice. Very nice. But ultimately, if we meditate on Krishna, right, we don't just meditate on Krishna, lotus eyes, lotus face, lotus feet, we meditate on Krishna. No, we meditate on Krishna in a service mood. We're supposed to serve Krishna. And really serving Krishna, really serving anyone, right, if you want to serve someone, it's not just that you bring that person what you think he should have. Right? That's the beginning of serving someone. Yes, I'm serving someone, I think he should have this, I think he should have that. But eventually, as you're becoming a better servant, you try to find out what he wants. And the more you are really becoming sensitive to what that person needs, then you're becoming a good servant. And we are trained like that by the spiritual master, right? To serve him the way he wants and what he needs. So when we serve Krishna in what he wants, Krishna is the well-wisher, Suridam Sarvadeinam, well-wisher of all living beings. Therefore, Krishna is an active well-wisher. The Christian concept of God is God is love, and God is all benevolent, and he is kind of like an entity which is bless, and love, and good to all. He's kind and blessing to all. And in India also, many deities are worshipped for just some blessing. But Krishna is not like that. Krishna is very active. Krishna is very personal. When Krishna is blessing, he's not just sitting there and blessing with his hand and sending a beam of light. But Krishna is personally taking interest in every living being. Therefore, he appears as Paramatma. And he's personally trying to pull every living being out of the motives of material nature. Nasayami atma bhavastu. He's hiding within the consciousness of every living being and trying to pull him out of the material energy. That is Krishna's aim and purpose. So if one really is the servant of Krishna, then one must, just as Krishna adopts every living being, he personally takes so much trouble to come with every living being in the material world, and even against his will, he's trying to give him transcendental knowledge. So one who wants to really be the servant of Krishna must take up this mission. All right, well, that is one point. In this age, it is very difficult to become free from the modes of material nature. We are so much conditioned by the lower modes of material nature that to develop pure goodness is very, very difficult. But it will develop. It will develop when we become absorbed in pleasing Krishna. Because then one can give up all designation, all identification with any material role as such. Then one can give up all upadis. Sarva upadi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam. And this is the point, right? The modes, being under the influence of the modes of material nature, means that we are identifying with particular upadis. Yes, this is the problem. We are always under the influence of some upadi. Upadi means some particular designation, some particular role, a social position. Our position in this world, upadi, right? We are concerned with that. Yeah. Who we are and what people think of us and who we are. And I was reading the other day just one page in the Lilamrita, You know, I just opened it up and was reading one page, and it was nice. There was a description of someone who came to the temple for the first time and who met Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was lecturing. And this person said it was almost impossible to understand him. His accent was so heavy. He said, but I could see that here was an old man, a very old man, and it was not easy for him to do what he was doing. I could see that. I could see that he had taken a tremendous effort, right, to come. And I could see that he was learned. And I could see that he must have spent many years studying some message. And now I could see that somehow or other, although his accent was very thick, somehow or other he was trying to communicate something to us with great difficulty. And therefore, I felt really, really compelled to try and understand what he was trying to say, although I couldn't understand it very well. And I could see that he was just very genuine. I could see that he had no interest in impressing anyone. So who in this world is beyond that? Who has no interest to impress anyone about who we are? Right? Such a person is sarvupadi vinir muktam, tatparatvena nirmalam. He is Rishikena Rishikesam Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. He has no interest in satisfying his own senses. One who is not trying to make any impression, who does not try to impress anyone, is not interested in satisfying his own senses. But one who wants to enjoy the impression that he makes, somehow or other, he is still trying to enjoy the senses. So, anyway, Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, so kind, that even if one has some attachment, some subtle attachment, but if one is nonetheless dedicating himself with all his energy to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to reclaim all the conditioned souls, then Lord Chaitanya will make all the necessary arrangements for one's purification. Whatever they may be, we don't know, right? How these arrangements for our purification will come, we have no idea. But we notice that sometimes they come in a very strong form, that we get smashed by the modes of material nature, just smashed. And otherwise, and it said, my spiritual master told me one story about a teacher in the high school, a black teacher, who said to his students, well, you're always going to remember this, you know, and I want you to really pay attention to what I have to say, so please listen carefully. Going to remember me for this, he said. It all comes out in the wash. Right? Okay, that's an American saying. It all comes out in the wash. But it means that in the process of devotional service, one will be confronted with whatever he's holding back. There's no question that one can hide this and that one can think, well, I'll just act as if this is not there, this little bit of conditioning, you know, as if this fear that I have, this fear to surrender, right? I'll just act as if I don't have it, and I just want surrender in this part. I'll just surrender to something else, but I won't surrender to this, right? There's so many things you can surrender to in devotional service. You don't have to surrender to everything. You just surrender to what you can surrender to, and the other things that you don't want to really surrender to, you just don't surrender to. And then, but you surrender to something you can surrender to, and then you hope that that will do. Right. But Krishna knows. Krishna knows exactly where we are not surrendering. And he will make arrangements. He will make arrangements. In the Chaturshloki of Bhagavatam, Desam Saratam Yuktanam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, one of the four Chaturshloki of Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Krishna will give the intelligence to that devotee who is sincere in worshipping him, who's always worshipping him, who's always trying to serve him with sincerity. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, and he says, yes, even if a devotee is very sincere, but he's not following the order of his spiritual master, then Krishna will make arrangements from within, right, to purify him. Or Krishna will make arrangements for his purification. The Lord will take charge of it directly. So that's very interesting, because I was a sincere devotee not following the order of his spiritual master. So here we see that the definition of sincerity is a broad one, and that it means at least anyone who is sincere enough to take up spiritual life. Yeah. Although he may not be so sincere that he follows 100% the desire of his spiritual master. Who is the 100% surrendered servant of the spiritual master? Where is such a disciple? Right. It is so difficult to be such a disciple. That is such a challenge, to just become such a disciple. Every year we go through the ritual of writing a Vyasa Puja offering. And during that offering, we try to renew our commitment, and we try to glorify the spiritual master. But beyond that, we're trying to also confess the gap that exists between our surrender and actually the desire of the spiritual master. And we try to say, so far I failed, but now I'm going to try again and do better. And, you know, this year I will really do it. You know, I'm going to give everything. And the next year we read again how we still didn't do it. So this gap that exists internally between the desire of the spiritual master and our actual surrender, that is what we have to conquer. That is where we have to increase our commitment. We have to make it smaller and smaller, and we have to do whatever he wants, right? And you know, fearlessly. And that's Prabhupada, right? So just fearlessly, just nothing could block him, nothing could intimidate him, nothing. He would just try it anyway, even when the odds were against. Anyway, try. You never know. And things started to happen. It was that we were just talking about how Prabhupada wanted his Gita published. And he just asked Brahmananda, your service is to get this Bhagavad Gita published, you know. I mean, what a thing to ask, right? Brahmananda is just a simple guy, and he is joined, and Swamiji. And Swamiji has this manuscript, and he's just asking him to get it published. So here is some Swamiji who has no money. He is an unknown writer from India, right? And he has some manuscript. Now, where do you go with such a manuscript to a publisher? So what would you think? Well, you know, okay, you get this order. So you might be thinking that, like, well, I don't know what to do now, right? So there was, then he was, but Brahmananda was serious. He was really thinking how to get Prabhupada's writing published. So he was totally sincere in trying to do it, although he didn't quite know how, you know, and it was really, materially speaking, impossible. Some author, unknown, no money, you know, where do you find a publisher for that? Maybe you look for some really small little publisher, you know, like who's helping amateurs to publish their book or something like that. But a real publisher? Phew. Then, somehow or other, there was someone who worked in the Macmillan company who sent a letter to ISKCON asking if they had a Bhagavad Gita. And so then Brahmananda was thinking that, well, I'll go to this person and, you know, I'll ask him to print our Gita. After all, he's from the Macmillan company, I'll ask. But when he came to the person, it turned out that that person was just a clerk and that actually he had been asking for a Gita for himself. Right? So, well, they didn't have a printed copy of the Gita. So it was a little difficult, but anyway, so Brahmananda tried to sell him a set of Bhagavatams. And just as he was there, then one of the upper managers, one of the upper echelon managers came and overheard the conversation. He said, "What are you doing here, actually?" He said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, well, this man was interested in a Bhagavad Gita. He wrote me a letter. He actually invited me." He said, "A Bhagavad Gita? You have a Bhagavad Gita?" And he said, "Yes, I have a manuscript of a Bhagavad Gita, actually." He said, "A manuscript of a Bhagavad Gita? We're just looking for one. We're just looking for one. You know, just come over to my office." Right? And like then it happened like that. So Brahmananda gets the credit for going to Macmillan because he was thinking to print through Macmillan. So all glories to him for going for the rhinoceros, right? For going to a big publishing house. That takes courage. Right? There was some encouragement, a letter of one man who asked for a Bhagavad Gita. He said, "Yes, then this must be it," right? And Brahmananda went, and then Krishna helped. Krishna made it all possible. And this is actually, this is what will happen when one becomes dear to Krishna. So preaching will never be successful if we are not first endearing ourselves with Krishna. Preaching does not depend on some technique, you know. Otherwise we would just learn hypnosis, right? If it was all about technique, we would just become expert in hypnosis. Just look deep, yes. Have a good look. You know, yes. Then with hypnosis, we could take over the world, right? And everyone would just be controlled. And there are yogis like that. It is described of the 8 mystic perfections, right? Kamavasaita, where you can just, you can do things that are impossible. You can do things contradictory to the modes of, to the laws of nature, and you can totally bring people under your will. You can make them do things that they don't even desire to do. Chant Hare Krishna. Just look in their eyes, piercing eyes. Chant, chant, and everyone. But we see that this is not the way we want people to chant. Under force by hypnosis. We want people to chant voluntarily, just on their own. Just like when we came out of the car, right? That guy that drove past, black bodied person drove past, and he just said on his own. We didn't say anything. Hare Krishna, he said, Hare Krishna. Yes. For that, one gets so much mercy. For voluntarily service. We want that service all to be voluntary. And that was, that is the aim. To somehow or other make people voluntarily render service. Yes. Prabhupada was very expert. Brahmananda was explaining that he said in the beginning, When Prabhupada Swamiji was inviting us to come, he started the Sunday feast, the Sunday love feast, as it was called. And Prabhupada considered that Sunday love feast very important, and he would personally cook all the preparations, and it was just inconceivable. And everyone would just eat it all and be just totally ecstatic, right? And eat so much, right? It's like, and then they would just go home, right? That was it. And Prabhupada would clean up everything and so on. He said, and Prabhupada never asked us. He never asked us. He just waited, right, till somebody would offer. Can I help? But as soon as they would offer, he would make them in charge. Right? If someone would say, can I help cleaning the pots? Then Prabhupada would say, yes, you are in charge of cleaning the pots. And that was it. You were in charge of all the pots in the universe, practically speaking, right? You were in charge of the pots, right? And they were, phew. So as soon as you just extended like a little bit of wanting to help, yes, then Prabhupada would take that help. He said, but he never forced anyone, right? So it was, you couldn't think, he pushed me into this. No, I offered it myself, right? In this way, he was very expert, very expert. And he captured everyone like that. What can we say? So, there are many ways and many where we can spread Krishna consciousness. There are many fronts on which to deal with the modes of material nature. We can battle it out in the rain with a kirtan party, or we can stand soaking in our shoes with a bag full of books, right, in the street, under an umbrella, right, and invite the people under the umbrella. That was an old system. Right. Devotees would go out in the rain, have a big umbrella. And they call them over. Someone is in the rain. Come, you know, it's like, but naturally to step under the umbrella, right? And then bang, you know, give them the book, right. Like that. Many tricks were employed, but still you'd get wet feet, you know, no matter what, right? You'd be soaking in your shoes. It was austere. Other devotees had another system again. They would just sit in the car and just call somebody over, right? And just ask, you know, and they think, oh, he must be asking the road. And people always want to tell the road, so, and then give the books out of the car, right? Others would, most would stand in the street, right, and knock on the car windows. People, you know, some people open and give the book or the record or whatever it was. Anyhow, we are... I have many fronts where we can deal with people who are under the influence of the modes of material nature. And Prabhupada was so broad that he engaged people in all these fields. He told the scientists, you go and defeat the scientists. And he was very eager about that. In that way, this movement is not stereotype. It's not that there's a particular mold that everyone will have to fit into, right? And that everyone has to become the same. It is not like that. But in one way, everyone has to become the same. Everyone has to start taking responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others. And the more we do that, the more that is our strength. If somehow or other we begin to take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others, then, and we do that on our own front, in the area where we are expert, in whatever field we have some expertise, in whatever we are good at, right? Because whatever we are good at, we naturally like it. Right? Everybody likes to do what he's good at, you know, that's fun, right? It's not so much fun to do something you're not good at, you know. Like, who cooked today? Yeah, I did, you know. I'm sorry. You know, I was on the... okay. Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, he was on the roster again. Anyway, you know, we can always go and heat up the leftovers from yesterday or something like that, or have some muesli, you know, like me. What's wrong with muesli? Muesli is nice. Some people just can't cook, and whatever they cook, they know 1,008 horrible preparations, right? It just always comes out like that, you know. So everyone likes to do what he's good at. So let us do what we're good at. But let us, through that, take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others. And the more we, and if we keep on preoccupying ourselves with that, oh, then, you know, mercy is coming. Then the mercy is coming. And if we don't know, well, I don't know what I'm good at, well, then we'll just put you in the book distribution army. And because that is very powerful, because Prabhupada was good at that. Right? Prabhupada was very good in taking the essence of things. And in his books, he was really good in just taking the essence from everywhere, the teachings of all the acharyas, take it together and just take the spirit of it all and bring it home to people. Right? And really take the essence of a verse, the essence which meant surrender to Krishna. And therefore, if you read Prabhupada's books, so in so many ways, he is telling us surrender to Krishna. So when you read Prabhupada's books, then you get hit so many times from different angles with the same message, surrender to Krishna. Actually, the real purpose of is pure devotional service. Actually, the real purpose is to give up all false ego. Actually, one should bow down before Krishna. Actually, humility means that one does everything for Krishna, and so on, and so on. And finally, after you've read for a while, you think, maybe I should surrender to Krishna. Yeah. That's what it does, Prabhupada's writing. So, in this way, all of us can do that in our own individual way. And that's the one thing we have in common. We're all very different. Some are intellectuals, some are practical. It doesn't matter. But all of us must take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others. Some are big preachers, you know, some can are salesmen. Right? One devotee used to sell encyclopedias door to door. Can you imagine? Before he's a devotee, he sold encyclopedias door to door. He's still distributing books. He's one of the early Prabhupada disciples. He's still distributing books, you know, I guess. He's a natural. Some are naturals. Not everyone is a natural. But whatever we are, everyone can take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others. And if we do that, then we are in the fire. That's what it means to be in the fire. And if one is not taking responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others, even if he's in the process, he's not really in the fire. He's not like in the core of the fire. One can be a little bit on the edge of the fire by being in the process. But if we take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others, then we are in the core of the fire of Krishna consciousness. And suddenly, we feel really Krishna conscious. Otherwise, we may be situated in the Krishna conscious movement, but we don't feel Krishna conscious. We feel weak, and we feel Hamaya is very strong and all that. But if we are taking responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others, we feel strong and inspired in Krishna consciousness. And Maya is at a distance. So, this is how we deal with the three modes of material nature. We simply engage in the service of Krishna, whether we're affected by the modes of material nature or not, and we simply try to engage others in the service of Krishna, no matter how much they are affected by the modes of material nature. And in this way, the whole world will rise above the modes of material nature, and the whole world will become like Vaikuntha. And Prabhupada said, the influence of Kali will disappear. And he, in one statement, he said, Treta Yuga. It will be like Treta Yuga. In another one, he says it will be like Satya Yuga, right? And we know it will even be better than Satya Yuga, because in Satya Yuga, not everyone is devotee of Krishna, although they're all transcendentalists. But in this time, everyone will not only be as transcendental as the residents of Satya Yuga, but they will be devotees of Krishna as well, all of them. So how wonderful will be the result of this movement when every member becomes more and more absorbed in taking responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of more and more people. The more, the merrier. That is our motto. And this is what we require. And how? I don't know. Some do it via the internet. Tick-a-tick-a-tick-click-a-tick-click-a-tick-click. Online chatting, you know. Right? Yes, you can now preach on the internet. Online chatting with someone on the internet. Others do it on the phone. I know some preachers who are on the phone all day long. Just all day long with the phone. Preaching like crazy. Right? Others do it face-to-face. Others do it in books, in writing. Right? Others do it through speaking. Others do it through book distribution, prasadam distribution. Others make movies, whatever it may be. Some do school programs. But we must take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others. Some do it by having regular parties in their house and inviting people for prasadam. Whatever we do, we must take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of others. In order to rise above the modes of material nature, in order to lift the planet above the modes of material nature. Because we understand that by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya's movement, this planet doesn't have to be governed by the three modes of material nature. This planet can be governed by Harinam Sankirtan, which lifts all above the three modes of material nature. Now I'll end. Any questions or any comments?
No, I think I don't know if I said that or if I meant that. I didn't mean it like that for sure. I don't remember that I said it exactly also. But we cannot just give a person what he wants, because obviously due to the contamination of the modes of material nature, we really want the wrong things, you know, so many wrong things. So no, we cannot give people what they want, but we have to find something in Krishna consciousness that they are attracted to. So we have to look in the person, where is it, which is the little bit of attraction they have for something, you know. You may say prasadam, yeah, but a particular kind of prasadam, right? Somebody really, you see, you know, this person loves pakoras. Okay, pakoras. That's what it is. Pakoras, you know. Give pakoras, right? More pakoras. Now I have a new type of pakora today. You do? Really? Whoa. What's that? Whoa. This is a pakora you've never tasted it before. Let me taste it. He takes his first bite. And you think, it's a mashed potato pakora. Takes another bite, but there's a tomato in the next layer. It's tomato pakora. Takes another bite. There's cheese in the core of it all. Yes, there are so many pakoras in this world, right? That are out of this world. So like that, you know. Music for the musicians, books for the book for the readers, and like that. So if we want to encourage someone about Krishna consciousness, we have to find what he likes in Krishna consciousness, what is attracting him, and then can we give. That's what Prabhupada did. If someone was interested in Sanskrit, there were Sanskrit lessons. After 1 week, they realized this is too much. Sanskrit lessons stopped. Right? Prabhupada just went with the interest of the people. Whatever little bit of interest they had in Krishna consciousness, he tried to encourage it. Krishna consciousness is a science, and what is known as science is a religion. What is known as science today, the guys in the white coats and all that, that's a religion. Right. Because that's based on belief. But Krishna consciousness is not based on belief. Krishna consciousness is based on facts that through some process can actually be experienced. Right? Krishna consciousness is the absolute truth. So that is fact. Right? That means fact. So Krishna consciousness is science. But what is called science these days is actually not science because it's based on theories. Yeah. So there are so many theories. Yes. And then tomorrow that theory is thrown out for a new theory. And then again a new theory. And always a new theory. So that, therefore, science is belief. Therefore, science is religion. Really. Has all the makings of a religion. And someone wrote an article saying that science today, it is a religion, it has priests, it has big institutions like religion has, and it even has a deity in the form of the computer. Yeah. Science is a religion. But Krishna consciousness is science. Real science. Why? You're asking. Krishna consciousness is a systematic process and it can be reproduced. You know, you can get the same results that great sages already got, like Devala and so many are mentioned, Asita are mentioned in the Gita. As they attained, they followed this, they attained perfection through this, and now you can also. So it's scientific. It worked in the past, it works also in the present. It's been tried and tested. So that's science. It can be reproduced. There's a certain system which produces certain results. If I take these and these substances and I mix them together, then I get this. So that's science. Right? So that's what we're doing. We're taking a test tube and another test tube, we mix it all together, and we're getting finally the result, a transformation of consciousness. Right? You follow the process of bhakti yoga and you get a transformation of consciousness, without a doubt. As much as a chemical reaction will take place when you put certain ingredients together. So it's as scientific as chemistry. But that's because they don't know what it is. It looks like a religion, but it is a science. When you come to Krishna consciousness, you're not asked to believe. We're not asking you to believe. We don't say you have to believe that Krishna is God. No. We're just asking you to give up your disbelief. Suspension, we say, for the time being, stop disbelieving. Yeah, that's also a type of belief. I don't believe that Krishna is God. That's also belief. So we say, just be open. Just be open for the experiment. That's all. So we don't ask you to believe in Krishna, but we're just simply asking anyone who comes, give up your disbelief for now. Right? And just be ready to find out more about Krishna and about the process of bhakti yoga. Follow it and see the results and then judge for yourself. That's Krishna consciousness. In a religion, everyone is asked, are you believing? Right? So much a believer, all that, you know? Huh? Do you believe? And if you don't believe, you'll go to hell. Now do you believe? I'll pray for you. I'll pray for you that you get the strength to believe. But if you don't believe, you'll go to hell. Now do you believe? You believe. You don't believe, go to hell. Well, that's all religion. But Krishna consciousness is, we don't ask anyone to believe. We just say, give up, put the disbelief on the shelf and come. And try it out and see the results for yourself. Judge for yourself. That's why it's a science. And an experiment can be done and produce the same results every time. That's why it's a science. You remember? Go tell them. Take responsibility for the Krishna consciousness of whoever asked that question. No, for somebody else. Why is our Krishna consciousness going down when we give it to others? Ah. Just then we are thinking too much that we are the doer. We should just let Krishna do. So it's not that we put so much energy in this person, and this person is just not becoming Krishna conscious, and we're trying and tried even more, and therefore I didn't chant my rounds in the morning. No, I'm chanting them, but I'll chant them tonight because I had to preach to this person in the morning, and this has been going on for a while now, but I think there is some result, so I think it's good. That's over-endeavor, and it means that we are thinking that we are the doer instead of understanding that Krishna is all-powerful, all-attractive, and if we simply give Krishna to people, it will work in them. Even if we don't immediately see, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharmam parichaya mamikam saranam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mukshayami masuchaha. He says that abandon all variety of religion or activity. Just surrender unto me. He says in the Gita. And he says, so, are you ready? Are you ready? No. Then, how come you're not following the Gita? Right? Yes, yes, I accept the Gita. Then you must surrender. Right? You can preach like that. Yeah. And think, oh, this person is not surrendering. But it's not like that. The message goes inside and it stays with a person. So we have to have more patience. We expose a person to some Krishna consciousness. Then we let it sit in that person. We let it just work. Yeah, we let it do its work. Just like when something is very rusted, a bolt is rusted, you put some Coca-Cola on top. Right? It's the only thing Coca-Cola is good for. And it will do the job, right? After it has been on there for a while, you can open any bolt, you know. Coca-Cola is so powerful. Yeah. Great stuff for opening bolts. Coca-Cola. It always works. Yeah. So so it sometimes takes some time to let things ferment, to let things process, to let somebody think. It ain't not surrender on the spot, but doesn't mean the preaching doesn't work. So we just preach, and then we go back to our own practices. Then after we do our own practices nicely, we preach a little more. So not that we sacrifice our own practices or the quality of our own practices. And when we keep good quality, and of our own practices, then we will not become pulled down by somebody in the course of preaching. How we can inspire devotees? By example, by being very inspired. It's the only way. You get your term. No, I don't think maybe to some degree. I think that when we say that the pure devotee is omniscient or omnipotent, it means that he may, to some degree, have a level of omniscience, right, which is definitely beyond what normal people would display. But true omniscience, or being truly all-knowing of what is going on in this world, is no, not possible. No, that only the Supreme Lord knows. And Prabhupada pointed that out. And he said many times that when he quoted the Leela of Lord Chaitanya in the Jharikhanda forest, and he said, that Lord Chaitanya can do. He is omnipotent. He is omniscient. Right? He said, we are not. Right? We cannot do that, but we can at least try and convince some people to chant the holy name. Yeah. But we cannot make the tigers and the deers dance in ecstasy and embrace each other. He said, that is the Supreme Lord. So, but Krishna can empower any living being as much as he likes. And therefore, apparently, he can become almost omniscient. But he's not omniscient in the philosophical sense of the term. But he may appear to be. Omniscient means all-knowing. Omnipotent. Omnipotent means all-powerful. So, and the other one is all-knowing. So they're not exactly the same. But they are related, obviously. I mean, you know, Krishna is all-knowing, he's all-powerful, and no one can be that, right? Obviously. Although we can be so powerful that it almost looks like that. And Prabhupada sometimes displayed features of, like, apparently knowing people's thoughts. And so many people have said this, right? As if he knew everything in the heart, looks right through you, he knew your thoughts, and he was just saying that thing that needed to be known. And not only even Prabhupada, sometimes others also have this, and many have this experience with a spiritual master, that he seems to know. Right? But Prabhupada very much so. Right. Many stories. People say he knew exactly. He looked right through me. He knew everything. As if he was omniscient. But he was not really omniscient. What do you think, Gauranga? Yeah, but you know, if we go into the realm of philosophy, then all these questions are relevant. Because in philosophy, there is no limit. But we have to understand that then everything is possible, you know. But in Krishna consciousness, things are governed by ras, right? So Krishna will never act contradictory to rasa. And for the sake of increasing rasa, etc., some things he will do and some things he will not do. So for the sake of rasa it's not the right thing to make someone as powerful as he is. Almost as powerful as he is. Yeah. So before we say God must be able to do this, must be able to do that. Yes, he's able to do anything, but what will he do? We must first understand the purpose of the Lord. And the purpose, rasa vaisaha, his aim is to increase the ocean of transcendental rasa. So in that rasa, he is the Supreme Lord. He is the enjoyer. And all, ekala ishvara or sabhabritya, one servant, one Lord, all other servants. That is the ocean of rasa he's increasing. So that proposal would be rasa bas. It would be of a contradictory rasa, not acceptable to make someone omnipotent. You see, so the philosophers don't understand rasa. They just look at logic. So it's a question of a poor logician who lacks the taste of rasa. Okay, now your turn. No, forget it. Maybe the answer in your head is wrong. No, see, put the wrong head in your mind. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur answered this question and said that how many people are getting a PhD, right? Or a doctoral degree from a university? How many in this room have that degree? Huh? Not many. In this room, nobody. Nobody in this room. And, you know, how many people in this street have a PhD, a doctoral degree from a university, right? Very few, right? Very few. So, but does that mean, right, that therefore we should close all the universities and that it has no value, the education, and that it's actually not a good thing? So the point is that Krishna consciousness is for everyone, right? But there are some who are able to come to a higher level in it, right? But everyone can do some service for Krishna. Everyone, and therefore, for those who cannot follow four regulative principles, there is Varnashram. There's Varnashram. So it's not that the whole world has to follow four regulative principles. If they cannot follow four regulative principles, they can be engaged in Varnashram, which means the sudra must accept a master and serve that master and be satisfied with whatever reward he gets. The Vaishya must make money or protect cows and must be very charitable, must maintain all the other classes. The Kshatriyas must selflessly protect people and the principles of religion. These two together. And the Brahmanas, they voluntarily live a renounced life. And whatever they receive, they live off charity and they teaching. And whatever charity they receive during the day, they give it away again at night. So, if people cannot follow all the standards of Krishna consciousness, then they must at least follow the standards of Varnashram. Hardly one endeavors for perfection. Of those endeavor for perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Yes, that's okay. But that doesn't mean that all these other people cannot be engaged. Also, everyone can be engaged in the service of Krishna on his own level. There's a program for everyone. This movement has a program for the whole world. Everyone. See? So it's not like a program for a few, and then because the four regulated principles are so difficult to follow, so it's not for everybody. No, there's a program for everyone. Bhagavad Gita also says, if you cannot follow these rules and regulations, then you work for me, for example. If you cannot do that, then it's 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. If you can't follow regulative principles, then you can do this, then you can do that. Not that it means that you don't need to follow four regulative principles. And you say, oh, good, then I think I'm not the four regulative principle type. I think I'm the Varnashram type. But if you think you're the Varnashram type, you may not go back to Godhead this lifetime. It may be a slow process, slowly becoming purified, and then in a later life you'll go back. But if you want to go back this lifetime, then we must follow the four regulative principles. Chant 16 rounds. And just really take up Krishna consciousness. Then back home. That's it. At the end. Okay, I'll stop. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.